Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have a delicious, well, we'll really have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or even a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior episodes, and I know some of you are new and quite a few are returning, thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. The last five episodes are archived on the website at recipeforpeacenow.com, and all the rest of the shows, including those five actually, are archived at the radio station at www.blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, now let's get started with today's episode, and today our topic is going to be unrealistic expectations. Now, what do we mean by that? Well, during the holiday season, by the way, happy holidays to those of you who are celebrating, and I know this is a global show, and that not all of us are partaking in the Judeo-Christian holidays, but in the United States, it's the holiday season really kind of, no matter what kind of religion you are, because it is fairly pervasive, and I think that during the holidays, people sometimes have unreasonable expectations of the festivities and of the holiday gatherings that they're going to have. And we've all seen that. It's fueled by outside forces like the media, and I'm already getting some agreement that the media and people are saying also cultural biases and religious concepts, religious biases. But it's this kind of an unreal expectation of, shall we call it perfection? And a wonderful, perfect family gathering where everybody gets along right away and there's no undercurrent of, well, let's call it not getting along. So I think that perhaps sometimes our get-togethers where we are trying to resolve issues, where we are trying to get the community together, when we're doing dispute resolution, when we're doing change, we want the groups to change so that they can reach a common goal or a common good to make the issues come together and reach consensus. And I think that just like the holidays, perhaps real life isn't as neat as the media would portray it. And thank you very much for all of your participation. I see that I'm getting lots of people who are agreeing with that one, that we have to have an expectation that it will not necessarily go real smoothly. And if we don't have an expectation that we will need some give and take and that we will need to get together and it will be complicated perhaps, depending of course on the issues involved, to get consensus among the groups, and we're going to have to work at it. If we don't have an expectation of some working, some give and take, some discussion, perhaps we're being unrealistic. And, you know, that occurs in all kinds of gatherings. And one of the things we need to think about, and which we're going to discuss tonight and today, are this episode of the show, is what our expectations are, and are they reasonable? Taking into account the people involved, the personalities involved, and the complexity of the issues. And really more importantly than that, perhaps, not only whether they are expectations are reasonable, but more importantly, how to make the expectations reasonable, how to set reasonable goals, reasonable expectations. And then, well, you know, I'm getting quite a bit, I'm getting some dissension. Thank you. I'm getting some disagreement because, for example, Janessa says that in order to make the expectations reasonable, if you can't make them reasonable, then you need to change your expectations. Now, that's an interesting thought. And we're getting some agreement that sometimes expectations change during the process. And that's really true, isn't that? Kyle says that the key is flexibility in modifying expectations as the process progresses. And that's, you know, that's a very good point. A lot of times we go in with a set of expectations, a set of goals, we'll call them, that we find out need some modification. Not maybe in the overall goal, what Recipe for Peace now often terms the common good that we're attempting to achieve, but in the way we do it, in the getting to the goal, and perhaps our goal, our expectation, might even be too big, too broad. And I'm getting some dissension. Quite a few people, Janessa and Ryan and Kyle and Tim, they're saying that oftentimes the expectation is unreasonable because it is too narrow, too specific, too difficult to achieve because it is too pinpointed. And we need to create a more flexible, more modifiable expectation. You know, I see the word flexibility and the word modification and the word general when we're talking about expectations. And yes, you know, I'm getting quite a few questions, and this is a very good question. Quite a few people are asking if the expectations are stated or they are in the mind of the host. They are a private expectation. I think... Let's see, we've got quite a few people saying that you put them out in the open, that you talk about them, and that's how you set the goal. And I think that's a very good point. The goal is something the group needs to work towards. The expectation of the outcome of the resolution, the outcome of the meetings, the outcome of the workshops, the outcome of whatever you're doing is an expectation that you need to work towards, right? You need to say, well, we're going to accomplish this. This is our goal. This is the path that we're working towards. So, yes, I think that the group has to define some expectations to focus on them. Otherwise, we won't know where we're going. You need to have a path. You need to know where you're going. And, I see a lot of people agreeing with that and saying that the key is the flexibility and the ability to change it. Other people are saying that they like to have the expectation written down, to actually write it down so it's before all of us and we can think about it. And thank you for your participation. Cynthia says it's necessary to write it down and distribute the expectations of what will be accomplished. I think that already in this show, I'm going to say the sentence that you all think I say constantly. And the sentence is, yes, people are writing it down. They're going, it depends. And, well, it really does. It depends whether or not you're going to get so bogged down in the wording of the expectation that it will take a lot of time and a lot of effort and get you not very far. You see, of course, these are practical, pragmatic groups, and we want to get to the goal. We want to reach the common good. We want to reach the common goal. We want to resolve the issues. And I have the opinion about written expectations that I have just from experience, and the opinion about that I have the same committee about opinion about subcommittees. It seems to me that it's good to write down the expectation if it is clear cut, if there is an issue that is easily resolved and easily set down. Not so easily resolved, but easily set down. This is what we're going to accomplish. And we can all agree on it. Good. We've gotten our first agreement. We've reached consensus. We know what the expectation is. Fantastic. We're heading towards resolving it. We're heading down the path to success. If the issues are more complex, and I am getting quite a bit of agreement with this, the issues are more complex, or they are multiple issues. Sometimes putting something down in writing causes dissension within the group because people argue about the wording, and they get bogged down in the minutiae of the thing. And it'll take a whole bunch of meetings and a whole bunch of emails up and back, and you're already fighting over the wording of your expectation when it's really just a guideline for the group to go forward with. You see, it's not something you're going to release to the press, I don't think. Now, if it is, well, you might be worried about the wording. But if it's going to bog down the group and create dissension, well, you have to make an educated and experienced decision about that. But it's not, as I often say on these shows, there's no real rules about what Recipe for Peace Now does. There's no rules about being a mediator, about being a host. The rule is you do what is practical within the issues, within the group, within what needs to be done so that you push forward, so that you get resolution, so that you have success. So it's kind of like, well, if that's good with the group that you're dealing with to write it down, yes, go for it. My personal experience has been that if it's fairly complex, it will bog you down. And I've gotten some dissension, I've gotten some agreement. It depends what kind of a group you're dealing with. But like Kyle says, the key is the flexibility. And, you know, I see people asking this question. It says, when have you had unreasonable expectations and what did you do about it? And I'm going to throw that open to the floor, because it's an interesting thought about thinking what our expectations are, what our outcome is, what the goal is for the outcome, and if they are or are not reasonable, considering the group, considering what needs to be done. And thank you. I've got quite a bit of participation. Thank you. Ryan says, and quite a few other people are saying this too. Thank you, Ryan and Charlie and Jennifer and like that. They're saying that the main expectation they had that turned out to be unreasonable was the amount of time it would take to resolve the issues. Oh yes, I'm seeing quite a bit of people going, oh yeah, that's a real good point. It's the amount of time that it takes. You know what? May I just comment that I've seen quite a few people also calling in. This show, we do it by email. The reason being that it's not a very long show, and we want to get to the recipes. And there's kind of no way of filtering the calls, and then we get kind of bogged down. So please, I don't particularly take live calls. Thank you very much for calling in. Please send me an email, and we'll talk about it that way. And also, you're free to email later on, too. And the amount of time, and people are saying the time took forever. You know, that's a real good point. Forever is about twice as long as you expected, I think. And a lot of issues, that, you know, we're all humans, and therefore it takes us a little while to think about what we need to resolve the issues. And we need to ask to email up and back, perhaps to call up and back. It'll take, if it's not a very simple issue, or one note type issue, it will indeed take some meeting. It'll take some time. It will take some work on it. And yes, I always figure it's going to take twice as long as I think it's going to take. And Dorette and several other people, this is a very, very good point. Not only does it take a lot of time, she says, but she had made the unreasonable expectation that everyone would be truly interested. Now, that's an idea, that everyone would be truly interested in the issues and would truly want to participate. Now, let's think about that. That doesn't necessarily happen now, does it? You've got people who say, well, I'm just going to sit in, or I don't really care, or they don't follow up when they say they will. And people are saying yes, and they've got people who are doing or assigned a task to try to help the group go forward, and the people who are assigned the task don't do it. And they don't do it, and they can't report back to the group. And, you know, that's a good point. Well, and people are saying that people don't do it because they get too busy. That happens. That has to do with time, I suppose, too. And you hope that people don't volunteer for something they can't handle. If they do, you should make it clear so that it's not a bias of the group, of course, but you need to make it clear that people will, if you can't handle it, to tell the host and a different assignment will be made, just before anybody fails or anything, you just make that announcement. But sometimes people lose interest. Sometimes people are not truly interested, and you need to see if you can get them interested and get them to interact. And I know we've talked about this before, of course, but, you know, you've got different kinds of personalities that come through. And Francis says that the unreasonable expectation that she often has is that everyone is interested in change. Everyone's interested in changing something to go forward for the common good. How many times have we had something where some of the people in the group are fighting? They don't want to change. They like it the way it is. And we've got lots of agreement here. Yes, sometimes that happens. In fact, the more complex the issue, the more public the issue, the more you're going to find that there's a group that thinks it's okay the way it is. Because it benefits them, doesn't it? And I'm seeing lots of people agreeing with that and giving some examples. For example, we've got some examples of cultural fighting against change because it's always been done that way. And how about outside influence? And we've got... we've got some political examples that people like the law the way it is. It benefits them. It is to their economic advantage. We have talked about economic advantage as a very strong motivator in our show, haven't we? And these are all very good points. Sometimes everyone is not interested in change. And if they are interested in change, they're not interested in the same change. They want something entirely different than another segment of the group. And this is where we go towards consensus. And this is why we make a convivial atmosphere. And this is where we make a goal or an expectation that we can move forward on, that we can agree on. Because we wouldn't be participating if we didn't have an interest. And even the interest of lack of change will modify the change, maybe. Perhaps it is a good point that they're making, that whatever it is good. It is valid. It is something that we would like, at least in part, and that the change we want is just a modification and not a destruction. How about that? That's an interesting thing to think about, and I'm getting quite a bit of agreement that sometimes the expectation is modified in its scope, in what we want. That's an interesting thought. And, you know, Tim makes an interesting point that one of the unreasonable expectations often is that everyone is sincere in their stated positions. Wow, let's think about that for a moment. Everyone is sincere in their stated positions. Sometimes people have ulterior motives, don't they? And that will come out. That will come out in discussion, that they're just saying it because they're siding with certain people or a certain side, but that's not really what they want. That they're working towards a different, angle on the issue. Now that's interesting, because that will come out in the discussion. That's why we're having these groups, right? That's why we're having these get-togethers, these meetings, because we want people to get consensus and move forward. And all of these problems, that they're not truly interested, that they might be not interested in change, or that they might not be sincere in their stated positions, they need to come out in the open. Because we need to get to consensus and we need to move forward. And I'm getting quite a bit of agreement. Yes, and yes, that does get out into the open, and that is the discussion that we will have with the group, with the different sides. And that's really why we're doing this. So we can truly get together on the issues and go forward. And Chandra says that sometimes people are not sincere in their beliefs, both religious and pragmatic. And, yes, this is also true. That goes to sincere in their stated positions. And you know what? I've gotten quite a few people, Jonas and others, and they're saying that a lot of times people want the same outcome for different reasons. Now, that's an interesting point, and we've talked about this somewhat before. Sometimes you've got different sides, different issues, different groups, and it looks like they're really, really different. But when you come down to it and we talk about expectations and where we want to go and what we want, we all want the same outcome, the same goal, the same common good, even if we perceive what we will get from it in different ways. You see, you can have different reasons for the same outcome, but it's the same outcome, isn't it? It's something we all want to work towards, right? I mean, some of the reasons may be economic, and some of them may be cultural, and some of them may be a moral reason. But if it's the same outcome, well, you're on the same page. You're fighting the same fight. You're working towards the same change. This is good. And now I've gotten a lot of questions basically asking, how do you make the expectations realistic? So you start out with an idea, and you want to get towards it, and you've got people that have come, and they want to get towards the idea, and it's very important, and they want to know, we've talked about unrealistic expectations, and I've got a lot of questions. How do you make the expectations realistic? How do you decide that? And, you know, Pat is making an interesting point. Pat says that you get a third party to look at the situation because it is unbiased viewpoint. A third party to look at the situation, like an expert? Yes, we've gotten some agreement with that, and Pat says yes, like an expert, someone who could really view it in a dispassionate manner. It's a good idea. I have done it in the past, because I've been doing this for a lot of years. Of course, if you get an outside expert who is unbiased and like that, we will assume that they are a professional, an expert, And this will oftentimes cost money. That is an economic outlay. It depends if you've got the ability to do such a thing or if someone will volunteer to do it. That's very nice. And you also need some agreement amongst the group that the person who's looking at it is indeed an expert, is indeed the right third party to look at it. But yeah, that's a real good point and a very professional point, and thank you for making it. Thank you, everyone, for participating. It's a very good point that sometimes you get a third party to look at it because oftentimes the parties involved are very close to the issues, are kind of vested emotionally, and it does make a difference if someone without bias looks at it. And Christy makes an interesting point that's very similar. She says that you can record the proceeding and then everyone reviews the recording, like a videotape or a, she says voice recording. You could also videotape it if we have to give everyone's permission, of course. But nowadays, of course, with computers and with the ability to record and to send it, it is easy to do to have everyone review the proceedings. You could make a transcript, which would also allow everyone to review it. A transcript is also a little bit, perhaps somewhat cost ineffective, depending on if you've got some funding. Oftentimes, of course, people are making the point that it could be like a board meeting and there'd be someone appointed to take notes, like a secretary on a board, to take notes and to distribute the notes amongst the group. You know, this is a very interesting point that several people have turned up, and thank you very much. I always learn something, and I didn't, when I do these shows, and I hope that you do too, I didn't think about this when I said it, but they make the point is being made by Jonas and Christy and others that if you take a video recording of the proceedings and then you send it around, it's liable to end up on YouTube. And that would be, unless everyone gives their permission, that would not necessarily be a good idea, depending on the issues and the group, of course. But, you know, there's an old expression that I think is attributed to Benjamin Franklin, and I believe it goes like this, that those who love the law and sausage should see neither one being made. And something that's true. And I was kind of like, yes, what a cool idea. But, you know, it's because it's messy. And it's true about mediation and about proceedings when we're trying to reach consensus and like that. They're not necessarily for public view and dissemination and discussion. Not because anything dishonest goes on or anything. It's just that it's a wee bit of a messy process, and sometimes people's opinions change a smidge during it, and it doesn't need to be public unless it, well, I suppose, you know, some of you are just going to say that you are doing public proceedings, and if you are, that's good. You know, my rule about there are no rules, but just generally speaking, you'd have to think about the outcome if it was put out to the public. Mm-hmm. So about recording the proceedings, I would think a transcript would do it. And, you know, Shelley's making a good point that an expert opinion would be like a consultant and that it's a good idea because they're not there to criticize but to focus the group. And, yes, that would be the idea of an expert opinion. It's not to be critical and to say rude things about the process. It's really to focus the group. Mm-hmm. And I see quite a few people, Adele and others, are saying that an expert opinion would be constructive criticism and that cannot come from within the group because from within the group, all criticism is viewed as non-constructive, right? Right. It's kind of an argument, really. But if a third party impartial that everyone can agree upon is indeed a third party impartial, like a consultant or an expert, has an opinion, it is constructive criticism, or really not criticism at all, but more like a practical suggestion, right? And if it is followed, it can be quite valuable to have a practical professional suggestion about focus, about how it's going, about whether or not the procedure, the process, is going in the right direction, and quite frankly, at the right speed. We talked about time and how long it was going to take, and sometimes issues are kind of time sensitive, aren't they? They're coming up within a certain time period and need to be resolved. Let's see, and Daniel says, and other people are saying about the aware of the gap between reality and expectation. And that's true. You need to think about that there is a gap between what is now and what, which is reality, and what is going to be, which is the expectation of a successful outcome in a certain direction, right? And there is a gap, and that's where we sit. We sit in the gap, right? We start with the reality of what is now. We get the people together to talk about what could be, which would be better than the now. And the could be is our expectation, isn't it? And people are agreeing, yes. The whole idea of what we're doing is that we are the gap. We are aware that the reality is not as good as it could be, and we are working towards the goal of the common good. And Georgine says that the trick is to focus on narrowing the gap between how things are and how we want them to be. Yes, this is it. This is the whole idea. And I have quite a few people writing a one-word question, and the question is, how? How do we narrow the gap between how things are, reality, and how we want them to be, expectation? And that's the tricky part, isn't it? The how, and how do we do such a thing? And here's some interesting suggestions, and I've done all of these, depending on the group, depending on how complex the issues, depending on if we have some sort of funding, and how long we've got to do it. Meyer says you can make a written plan so that you do say where you are now and where you're hoping to be. And I have done that. It is a good idea, depending on the group, but I still have the same reservations that I had at the beginning of the program, and other people are saying this too. It depends on whether you're going to get bogged down on the writing, on the actual wording of it. I suppose it's a lawyer thought, and lawyers stood around worrying about phrasing and things. But a written plan is a good idea if it can be agreed upon within a reasonable time so that you can go forward and not get bogged down. And Ellen says that agreement is the first step in goal setting. And yes, that's the idea, to get consensus as to where we're going. And you know, Esperanza and other people are saying are putting in an interesting word that I don't usually use, but this is it is a concept that's applicable to this. And they're using the word visualization. That Esperanza says you can use visualization exercises as a group, that if participants are willing to stretch and be truthful as to what they want. Visualization, which is where you think about what you want the future to look like. Isn't that really the definition of visualization? And I see that some people are sending in something more complicated and more technical than what I just said. But I think that kind of covers even the technical definition and kind of a... It is true that I am not a psychiatrist or visualization technique expert. And I don't mean visualization. I don't think Esperanza did either in a very technical way. But really in the idea of thinking about and visualizing what you want the outcome to be, what your expectation is, and then going forward from there. And if you can do it as a group and do it as a dynamic, the group dynamics will do it. And Wilson makes an interesting point that in order to have successful visualization, you need to have self-realization to articulate your needs and expectations. You have to be able to articulate it and really, you know, visualization and all these things, the real concept is to focus, isn't it? To get us to focus on what we want done, what our ultimate outcome will be. That's the focus, to get the group to focus in the same direction, down the same path, towards the common goal, the common good. And, you know, and Paul makes an interesting point. He says that sometimes when you articulate, you find out that you do not seem to have a common goal. You know, and it's a good point. And that is when we might need to have a wee bit of modification, isn't it? And, you know, it's important to know that at the outset, that, oh my, we don't have the same goal that's being stated, but we have the same problem, the same issues, the same need for an outcome. And just as we discussed, sometimes the goal is not the same, but the needed outcome is. Do we understand that? Yes, I'm getting a lot of agreement. It's good to know what the goal is if you have different ones in the room, but we all need to understand that the outcome that we need to achieve is the same. And that's a kind of a big idea. And that goes to the common good, doesn't it? We've talked about that, that the common goal and the common good are not necessarily the same. You see, we can have a common good that we need to achieve that is a different goal for each of us, but it's a common outcome that we need for change, that we need to get done, you see? And that, my friends, is really the purpose of the convivial atmosphere, right? It's so that we don't, that Recipe for Peace now so advocates. And yes, we are getting to the recipe part. It's so true. It's a segue. You know, people go, is this the recipe? Yes, it is. And the reason that Recipe for Peace now advocates the creation of a convivial atmosphere using food and a potluck and shared breaking of bread is because this is a way to get to know these things. And to have people open up and be truthful about why they're there and what they want to accomplish. And that, my friends, is perhaps the most important thing of all. What we want to do and why we want to do it. And if we can do that in a convivial context, it'll work. It'll be good. Now, I am indeed getting to the recipe portion of this show, and I know that a lot of you are repeat listeners. Thank you very much for being here, and I know that quite a few of you are new, too. Thank you for coming. I hope to have you again, and I'm going to say the same thing that I always say, and you all know that I'm going to do this, but I can't help it because it's so terribly important. When you're going to have a group of people eating together, and especially if it's a potluck, or even if it's catered or something, you need to have people know what is in the food. First of all, we're going to send emails around, and we're going to ask people if they have... If they have any food allergies or any religious or dietary restrictions concerning food. Very, very important. And we're going to accommodate those. And then we're going to ask that everyone who brings any kind of a dish label it. And not just with the name of the dish, which is nice, but we want to know what's in it, so that nobody gets sick because they had an allergy, so that no one gets offended because they had a religious prohibition, and no one gets panicky because they had a dietary prohibition. Very important to label so that we all know what we've got. We all know what we're eating. Very, very important. And not to cheat and leave off condiments or something. Everything needs to be labeled. And you all know that I think that the host has the responsibility of bringing extra, of being sure that there's enough food. And also, I think there should be a safe recipe, something that pretty much everybody's seen the ingredients to, understands what it is, and can basically eat it, and you will have checked to see if anybody has the problems, like the allergy, the prohibition problems. And so we're going to do a safe recipe, and then a little bit more adventurous recipe. And our safe recipe is actually going to be a soup. And those of you, yes, you're already writing in. Thank you very much for noticing. It's kind of like, oh, you have been listening. And the thing I always say about soup is that if you're having a potluck type thing, the thing about soup is it is somewhat messy. And so you have to decide about how many people you're having and whether or not it's going to be too messy in your facilities. But this is kind of a nice soup, and it's nice when the weather is a little bit colder. And it is a mushroom soup with egg yolks. And you need to label the egg yolks very clearly, because it is an unusual ingredient in the soup, and some people are sensitive to eggs. That's very important. So let's have the ingredients first. So here we go. We're going to have about 2 tablespoons of olive oil, 2 tablespoons of butter, 3 cloves of garlic minced. Yes, everyone knows I like lots of garlic in my food, less if you don't like it as much. So that's 3 cloves of garlic minced, a nice-sized onion that we're going to chop small, 2 pounds of mushrooms sliced thin, about 4 tablespoons of tomato paste. That also needs to be, of course, labeled, right. 6 cups of chicken broth. If you want to make this more vegetarian, you will use vegetable broth. Chicken broth is a little bit more tasty, but vegetable broth will be just fine. Not vegan, mind you, because of the egg yolks, but you can use vegetable broth, so that's 6 cups. Like a teaspoon of fresh chopped basil, 6 egg yolks, 4 tablespoons of grated Parmesan cheese, and a little bit of salt and pepper. You could do that to taste. Okay, so what are we going to do with this? In a pretty big, heavy pot, over medium heat, we're going to heat the oil and the butter, and we're going to saute the onion and the garlic until it's all translucent and real nice. It'll take, what, about 5 minutes or something. Then we're going to add the mushrooms, and we're going to sauté them for about 5 minutes also, so they're nice and hot and cooked through. Then we're going to stir in the tomato paste, the broth, and all the herbs, and we're going to cover and simmer the whole thing for about 15 minutes. And while that's simmering, we're going to beat our egg yolks and cheese until the eggs are thick. We're going to make the egg yolks and the cheese together. Egg yolks you beat first, of course, and then you work in the cheese. And then, so that we don't get scrambled eggs in our soup, because if we just plop the egg mixture into the hot soup, the already hot broth and like that, it's going to make scrambled eggs and look silly and not be nice. So we're going to beat 1 cup of the hot soup into the eggs very slowly so that we don't get scrambling. So we're going to make the eggs hot and thinner. And then we're going to take the egg mixture and put it into the saucepan with all the other stuff and stir it in real good. And we're going to reheat the whole thing. If you don't boil it, but just make it hot and simmery, it will probably be better because you also won't have the egg problem. The eggs are a wee bit sensitive, but they do make the soup rather rich, which is delicious and nice. And with the cheese and the egg yolk, it makes it kind of a rich mushroom soup. And it's really quite delicious. You will, of course, remember to label these things, even though I've called it the safe recipe, because we know what the items are. But it's a little unusual to have the eggs and the cheese. If people are not vegetarians, of course, chicken broth is a little more tasty, but vegetable broth will certainly do. Not vegans, of course, because there are eggs and cheese in this. So that's this one. And we're going, and it makes a delicious soup. And, it, you know, it's got the eggs and the onions and the garlic and the mushrooms. And it's very popular. So well, that was our soup. I'm going to call that our safe recipe for today, because the items are going to be carefully labeled. And most people know what they are and are not particularly prohibited from eating them. Okay, now our adventure recipe, as promised, is going to be a chicken and pimento casserole. And you know what? I got several questions about it because, you know, I announced these things a little ahead of time and people looked at it. And several questions have asked me what a pimento is. And you know, of course, that I live in the States, so I use ingredients that I can easily find here. But this is a global show, and of course, you substitute whatever it is you like, and whatever it is that goes to the taste of your people in your group, and to the taste of what you think is delicious. Pimentos, where I am, are kind of a small, sweet red pepper, kind of soft, that come in a little jar. I guess it's an oil base. It's kind of a pickled oil base. Everyone knows what a keeper is. It comes in a little jars like that with a brine, so to speak. And you take them out and you pat them dry-ish, but you give them a little pat. You drain the juice, and then you use them. They are the little red things that are somewhat common all over in olives in drinks, but they are a small red sweet pepper. You do not like pimentos, you can use any other thing you want. In fact, I have several people saying that they like jalapenos a lot better than pimentos. That is something that would be fairly spicy here and would need to be carefully labeled. Pimentos are a more bland type item. And it is true, I know a lot of you think I do this, but this is absolutely true. My recipes tend to be more on the sweet and savory than on the spicy side, because I feel that more people like to eat that, and it is better all around for a potluck, that people find it more tasty. But that is up to you. And yes, several people have said I use a lot of garlic, and I do. Okay, so this is going to be the chicken and pimento salad, casserole, excuse me, hello, the chicken and pimento casserole, and you will substitute whatever you like according to your taste. Okay, so we have 3 tablespoons of butter, and I'm going to use 6 ounces of drained pimentos that we're going to finely chop, because they're going to permeate the whole thing and really be in the sauce. We're going to have 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour, about 3/4 of a cup of, maybe half a cup, of whipping cream. Yes, do not substitute something lesser than that, something thinner. About a cup of chicken broth, a cup of shredded cheddar cheese, a cup of asiago cheese, or something like that that you like, a cup of sliced mushrooms, sliced nice and thin. We're going to use a big yellow pepper that we're going to core and chop, a big red pepper. Same thing, core and chopped, and seeded. You know, of course, take the seeds out of the peppers. And 2 stalks of celery we're going to chop. And then we're going to have about 1 pound of diced cooked chicken breast. Remember, it needs to be cooked, so cooked chicken. And just for color and for some taste, let's put in a few chopped green onions, like 1/4 cup. And 1/2 cup of breadcrumbs, because we're going to put those on the top. And here we go. We're going to preheat the oven to 350. And while that's doing it, we're going to melt 2 tablespoons of the butter in a medium pan. And we're going to add the pimentos and stir them about a minute over a high heat just to make them hot, to get them hot and cook through. We're going to add the flour, and we're going to stir the whole thing to make a paste. Then we're going to add the cream, which is why we need to use whipping cream and not skim milk. And we're going to stir that until it thickens. So we've got the pimentos and some butter and some flour and the cream. And we've made already a thick, creamy base. We're going to add the broth, and we're going to stir this whole thing until it's smooth. And I usually like to use a whisk because it's easier. You can use whatever you please. And we're going to add the 2 cups of the shredded cheese, and we're going to add them rather gradually because we're going to stir this whole thing until it's melted and it's smooth. So what we've made is really a creamy pimento cheese sauce, a base. And so we're going to take the other tablespoon of butter, because we only use 2 of them, and we're going to add the mushrooms, the peppers, the celery, and we're going to cook it until the vegetables are tender, which should be about 5 to 7 minutes, because we chopped them and they're not real, real dense. And then we're going to remove the whole thing from the heat. We're going to stir in our chicken, which we've mentioned already is already cooked. So we're going to stir in our diced chicken, and we're going to add the green onions also, a little bit of salt and pepper, and we're going to stir the whole thing together. We're going to stir in the cheese sauce. We're going to call it a cheese sauce. That's fair, isn't it? So we're going to have, in one pot, we're going to have the mushrooms and the vegetables and the chicken and like that. And we're going to stir in the cheese sauce. Now, we've got this delicious mixture, right? We're going to take this whole mixture, and we're going to spoon it into about a 2-quart casserole dish, maybe more like a 3-quart casserole dish. And we're going to sprinkle the breadcrumbs on top, and we're going to put it into our 350 preheated oven, and we're going to cook it until the whole thing is hot and bubbly. In fact, you know, if you have the facility to do so, you could bring the casserole before you bake it. You can make it and cook it and make everything cooked through. And bring it, well, we won't call it raw because it's not raw, right? Everything's cooked through. But it hasn't really been baked in the casserole dish yet. You could bring it with you and you could bake it on the spot so that it's nice and hot, and if you have an oven, and make, so it's nice and hot and bubbly. And it smells wonderful. And you know, that's kind of nice in the room, right? Where it's got a lovely scent, and that adds to people's anticipation of wanting to stay at the party, wanting to taste it, wanting to know what it is, you see? And so we're going to cook it, and it's going to get all nice, hot, and bubbly, and it's got the breadcrumbs on top. And it's just delicious. And yes, somebody has mentioned that they've seen this, that I've done this before, and they were at a potluck. It is true that sometimes, and it does make it a little sweeter, of course, sometimes I do add a cup of raisins to it, just because I like raisins. And it depends on the group, and I suppose if I've got raisins in the cabinet. But I generally give the basic recipe when I sit here. And yes, if you've seen it and I've put raisins in it, the answer is yes. I get bored. No, sometimes my recipes get modified if I know the group or I decide that it would go nice with the other things or something. Yes, I think raisins go nice in chicken casseroles. So, and of course, you would add those when you add the chicken because raisins don't need to be. Sautéed, particularly. We all know this. And they will plump up and bake when you're baking it, yes. Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, hello. I'm glad that you've tasted my chicken pimento casserole. And yes, there was raisins in it. People are asking about nuts, whether or not they can add nuts. That would be delicious, of course. And if I'm adding raisins, yes, it would be a delicious idea. I am leery of nuts, and you don't generally see me adding them into the recipes, the reason being that a lot of people have nut allergies, and you don't want someone to not be able to eat it because it will make them sick, and you need to be very careful. And peanuts are a great, great villain in this, but a lot of people have different kinds of nut allergies, and I don't generally add nuts to hardly anything. And if I do, I label it extremely carefully so everyone knows, and I never use the word mixed nuts because no one knows what that means. You might be allergic to walnuts or something, and that's in the mix, and that would be bad. So, yes, I recommend against nuts, and if you like to add, you know, all of these recipes you modify to your own taste, and we've discussed this before. The show is indeed global, of course, and I use chicken because it is easily gotten where I am. It is cheap, it is easy, and everybody knows what it is and likes it just fine, generally speaking. And people always ask about different kinds of meat. Yes, whatever it is that is common to your area and you like to use and you think people will like. People ask about rabbit and goat and things like that. Whatever it is, but you need to accommodate the density of whatever kind of meat it is, and the, for lack of a nicer term, the kind of greasiness of it, and whether or not it tends to be stringy. You have to accommodate that to modify the recipe. So, that's the two recipes for today, and thank you very much for listening. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your participation. If you want to send an email, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website on which the last five shows, now this one and four others, the last four and this one, that are archived on the website at www.recipeforpeacenow.com. The other shows, including those five, but all the ones that we've done, and there's quite a few, are archived on the radio station at www.blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. So, if you'd like to listen or if you'd like to send, we always love hearing from you. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Thanks. Bye-bye.